Good morning and welcome to Prairie Unitarian Universalist Society. We welcome people from all religious, racial, and ethnic backgrounds and all sexual orientations. We are a lay-led congregation, and I'm Erin Bosch, the current president. This morning we have opening words by our visiting minister, UU minister, after which we will have 1 minute of silent meditation.
We bid you welcome, who come with weary spirit seeking rest, who come with troubles that are too much with comfort and afraid. We bid you welcome, who come with hope in your heart, who come with anticipation in your step, who come proud and joyous. We bid you welcome, who are seekers of a new faith, who pray and explore, who learn. We bid you welcome, who enter this hall as a homecoming, who have found here room for your spirit, who find in this people a family. Whoever you are, whatever you are, wherever you are on your journey, we bid you welcome. Something to do with growing up Presbyterian.
Any voice left?
The newsletter, your newsletter, the Prairie newsletter, said, "Why have a church?" Which was not my title. My title was "Why have church?" Somehow that A got added. I'm not sure that it makes a whole lot of difference. Except that by adding the article, the A makes it sound more specific than I intended it to be. I was not thinking so much about why have this particular church, Prairie UU Society, as I was thinking about liberal religious institutions in general. So you can mull that over for the next few minutes and see how it fits in, if at all, with what I have to say. On the other hand, though, as I thought about what I wanted to say today, the particularities of this place were certainly in the forefront of my thoughts. This is the last in my series of 6 Sundays with you, and I didn't want to leave you without acknowledging your current efforts. I chose my topic knowing that you are struggling, and I don't think that's too strong of a word, knowing that you are struggling with the future of this specific church, this specific institution. What should the direction of Prairie be? I know that it is not an easy question to answer. With that in mind, I ask, why have church? And give you some reasons and some wisdom from other people that I hope might prove useful to you in your journey and in your searching for what kind of an organization you want to be. There is an old saw that says, church should comfort the afflicted and afflict the comfortable. I would give that as one good reason to have church. I'm not sure, though, that that's enough of a reason for you or me to drag ourselves out of bed on a lazy Sunday morning and gather together here, or in any other house of worship, if you will. Now, I have a different take on the word worship, but that's a subject for another day. Why give up precious time in our busy schedules to be here in this room at this time? Why, as people who are strong advocates of individualism, voluntarily come together as a community of individuals. Why would people who have been known to have a healthy disdain for institutions and to express that disdain willingly give of themselves to this institution which I am calling a church, using a word that I would wager makes some of you wince, a word that we are not always comfortable with? If I were to ask each one of you why you think church is important, I imagine I would get some of the answers that were in the opening words this morning, or the hymn we just sang, or even in the children's story. We have church because it's good to come together to share our sorrows and our joys. It is good to come together to celebrate days of our lifetime, matters small and great, as the words of one of our hymns put it. We come to celebrate and contemplate the mystery of life, to learn how others have done this and how they have coped with the challenge of being human. Like the three youngsters in the children's story, we gather in this room to get a wider view of this strange condition we are all suffering from, life. We come together to preserve and pass on our long tradition that affirms human dignity, encourages spiritual growth and discovery, and is intellectually honest in the face of the complexities of our time. The question for us is not just why have church, but why have a church that is religiously liberal, or is it liberally religious? When I was an interim in upstate New York at the Plattsburgh Unitarian Universalist Fellowship, there was a letter to the editor in the local paper one day. The letter writer accused a member of that fellowship of belonging to a church organization that was really no more than a social club playing at religion. Is that why we have church? To be a social club playing at religion? I don't think so. I don't think we play at religion here. We are, as Reverend David Blanchard wrote, I hope we are anyway, an alternative path for spiritual understanding and religious expression. We are not an alternative to those grounding endeavors. And our work together is in finding ways to extend the understanding and practice of liberal religion. We come together because we think there is a possibility of building a community where people can be together in peace and with compassion and justice, even though they are different and have differences. The Unitarian Universalism message still needs to be proclaimed, still needs to be heard. But do we need to have a church, an institution, to do this? Couldn't we just somehow keep that message alive without actually having to get out of bed on a Sunday morning? Without having to give up time we could use on other endeavors? Look what happens to churches, to institutions. They have a tendency to squash the very message they are trying to convey. Excitement, creativity, sparks of divinity. Don't these get too quickly extinguished, restricted when put into the box of an institution like a church? Doesn't the religious freedom we believe in so strongly get lost in an institutional setting? Yes, yes, and yes again. That is all true. There is also always the possibility and the danger that we will lose something of our faith tradition and our beliefs when they get translated into institutional forms. This is what Robert Fulghum is telling us. You know, I have to do a Fulghum story on the last time I'm here. Warning us about, I think, in this story of, well, let me tell you the story. Fulghum writes, "When I think of staff meetings, board meetings, or time served on almost any committee, I think of the one man who triumphed over meeting madness. The man whose style I sometimes wish I had. David Dugan was his name. Well, he had a college degree in civil engineering, and though he read history for pleasure, he enjoyed the pose of the simple-minded common man. Popeye was his model. While in college, he had started as right defensive tackle on the football team for 4 years. After college, he made his living as a heavy construction contractor, specializing in sewer systems and pipelines. He ran his life and business the way he had played football. Straight ahead, up the middle, full power, nothing fancy. Plain spoken in his conversation, he used one adjective, sumbitch. After S-U-M. You didn't notice when he spoke of his sumbitch wife, and sumbitch kids, and sumbitch friends any more than when he spoke of the sumbitch government, sumbitch Russians. He varied the tone a little, but it was all sumbitch. I met him at a poker game. I liked him right away. He came to church the next Sunday saying he'd never heard sumbitch poker player preach. He stayed on to become an active member of the church. We found him kind and generous behind his facade. His laughter kept us loose in tense moments, and his resources kept us in business when we needed help. Dugan's way was large, and he didn't hold back when it came to his part in the life of the church. If we had some trash to haul, he'd drive up in a 4-ton dump truck. He sent a road grader to move some gravel around, and to fetch a Christmas tree, he sent a diesel truck hitched to a lowboy trailer, the kind used to transport bulldozers. For Dugan, there were very few of life's problems that could not be addressed with heavy equipment and a go-get-em attitude. Dugan lured me to his construction site one fall with the promise of being allowed to drive a D8 Caterpillar tractor. Sitting in his office trailer drinking coffee, he astonished me by throwing open his briefcase to reveal bundles and bundles of $100 bills. And a .38 caliber pistol. It was like being in a movie where the bank robbers were about to split the loot. Not to worry. He explained that because his projects were often far from town and he had to hire a lot of temporary labor, he made his payroll in cash. He was bonded to carry as much as $500,000 and licensed to carry the gun to protect himself. Because he was often away for long stretches of time, Dugan refused an invitation to serve as an officer on our board of trustees. But when he was in town, he came to board meetings anyhow. He thought he ought to contribute something to life of the church beyond just sitting in the pew. And he wanted to know what was going on from the source, not the newsletter. As is often the case, member of the board of trustees sounds like an important honor, when in fact, the work of a board is more often mundane than not, as I'm sure many of you in this room know. During the year when Dugan attended meetings, the board's entire time and energy was devoted to a leaking roof, parking problems, and the difficulty of getting wholesale prices for paper towels and toilet paper. Dugan never said a word. He listened with chagrin written all over his face. One January evening, the board shifted to an even more fascinating problem. On the entrance side of the church, the driveway had developed potholes. Patching had not helped, so it seemed the driveway would have to be repaved, an expensive proposition. However, on the exit side, nearest the church school, the driveway was smooth, encouraging a level of speed thought dangerous to children. Speed bumps would have to be built there, and signs posted, more expense. 3 hours had drained away while every possible dimension of this driveway problem had been considered. No solution in sight, the meeting fumbled on. From his seat outside the board circle, Dugan raised his hand to make a proposal. Leave the potholes on the entrance side and dig potholes on the exit side. Spray a little tar in them, call them speed holes. He could do it with a shovel and a couple of cans of hot tar in a couple of hours. Free. The board gnawed on the problem for another hour, worried about being sued and what the neighbors would think. In exasperation, Dugan stood up, placed his briefcase on the table, and asked forcefully, "What's this sumbitch church worth? The whole sumbitch thing. Buildings, land, everything. Give me a round figure." They didn't know about the briefcase. The church treasurer replied, "Oh, maybe $300,000. "Great," cried Dugan. "I'm going to buy a sumbitch." And he opened his briefcase, laid his pistol aside, and began throwing out bundles of $100 bills until he reached the established price. Silence. Stunned silence. "Give me the deed and it's done," said Dugan. "What are you going to do with it?" someone asked. "I'm going to get my crew and equipment over here and we'll level the sumbitch and haul it to the sumbitch dump before sundown. And I'll use the land for the cemetery you guys are headed toward in these meetings of the living dead. I'm going to put up a sumbitch monument to the unknown god." "What's the gun for, Dugan?" an anxious member asked. "I was thinking about putting every last one of you sumbitches out of your misery." "Too bad it's against the law." Then he chewed the board members up one side and down the other for not spending their time on important things, and how he came to church for religion, and what he got was pissant construction workers he wouldn't hire for a day. And by God, if they decided they wanted to get serious about all the things a church ought to be doing in this world, some bitch let him know. Packing up his money and his gun, he stomped off out the door, shouting from down the hall, "Some bitch offer still stands." What Dugan said and did, writes Fulgham, had a familiar ring to it. For all those who have the noble work of the world to do, the question is essentially the same, yes? Fish or cut bait, dream or do. Dugan's acts are nothing new in religious circles. The prophet Jeremiah didn't use quite those same words, but his sumbitch message was about the same. Woe unto you, shape up or die, get serious or get out of the way. No, we didn't dig the speed holes, concludes Fulgham. Just too simple a solution. But there were more than a few times that the board members thought they'd made a great mistake. They should have sold the sumbitch. Well, that's one thing that can happen to institutions. But there's also always, always the possibility of transforming our institutions. The church doesn't have to be yet another organization that demands our maintenance. The maintenance of an ecclesiastical institution should be the means to an end, not an end in itself. Roy Phillips, some of you may know, former minister of Unity Church Unitarian in St. Paul, Minnesota, has a book called Transforming Liberal Congregations, only about this big. Strongly recommended. He begins his book with a description of a cartoon titled New Members' Worst Nightmare. The cartoon shows an elderly man with a long flowing beard speaking to a young couple new to the church. The couple looks at a huge bulletin board listing all the congregation's committees. At the top is emblazoned, "Our committees need you." The old man says, "Most people are on 9 or 10 committees, but since you're new, I'm sure people will understand if you only join 6 or 7 to start." The best part of the cartoon, Phillips says, is the list of committees themselves. Now, of course, there's the finance committee and the investment committee and the board of trustees, but it goes on. Thermostat control committee. Committee for more comfortable pews. Committee for the promotion of committees. Plant watering committee, pigeon control committee. Now, I'm not trying to disparage the wonderful work that the board here and all your committees do. It is necessary work. But this kind of work of the church is not why we have church. Certainly without the kind of nitty-gritty effort by not only the people on the board and all the committees, but by all of you who keep this place functioning. You know, your pledges and doing coffee in the morning and just having auction, silent auction items and so many things. Without these kinds of efforts, we obviously would not even be here this morning in this room, considering the deeper reasons for having church. Why have church? Well, for all of the reasons I've already mentioned, yes. And for three more reasons that build upon and go beyond the ones we usually think of and have already mentioned. First, I think we have church, that is a liberal religious church, to bring out the individual's talents. Unitarian Universalist Minister Emeritus Walter Royal Jones, Jr. expresses it this way. Emerson spoke of the sermon as life passed through the fire of thought, but it is not only in sermons that this is so. When we minister to one another, whether with hallowed words or with gestures of healing, we can only lead to places we have been. And in so doing, we risk the changes that occur when we surrender the secrets of our solitude to the gaze of others. When others allow us to enter into their thoughts and their feelings, we must be ready to step carefully as in a sacred place. We walk with them through the forests of their doubts, the caverns of their dreams, and the high places of their prayers. To have these open to us is a deep act of trust. We can respond only by opening the secrets of our souls as well, vulnerable and tentative. Yet there is strength in this power, and this trust and power in the exchange. And this is what church is really about. And more than a century and a half ago, William Ellery Channing, who some have called the father of American Unitarianism, said that the purpose of religion is to promote spiritual development in a lifelong process of actualizing one's human potential. Roy Phillips, in the book Transforming Liberal Congregations, says that a congregation's role is to offer a setting in which that holy potential of each one of us can be supported and nurtured. I agree completely. That is what a church should be about, nurturing and supporting us as individuals in search of our holy potential. We have church to have creative interchange, to acknowledge the divine seed in each and every one of us, to provide the roots in which this seed will grow and the freedom within which it will flower. Unfortunately, I think very few churches do this. It is not easy to open the secrets of our souls and expose our vulnerability and tentativeness. We want to stay with what we know in church, with pigeon control committees and busy work and what is comfortable. You may know the story of the drunken man on his hands and knees crawling around on the sidewalk beneath the street light. A stranger approaches and asks what he's doing. I lost even more important than church as a place to support individual growth and healing. So the second reason I would give for having a church is to be a prophetic voice. This is, for me, the most important reason to have church. Once we are secure as individuals in who we are and what we believe, we can take that security and those beliefs out into the larger community and make our voices heard, knowing that we have this church, this place, this gathering of people to return to, knowing that we can come here on Sunday mornings and gather strength and courage from each other. To be a prophetic voice, we must be willing to speak up and speak out when we see injustice. We must be willing to name the elephant in the living room, to say the emperor has no clothes on. And we have to be willing to say it over and over and over again. Have to be willing to be countercultural people of faith. I once had the great privilege of hearing Cornel West speak. He called on us to ask the most basic questions of life. to think about what it means to be human. He said that the church is one of the last places in our society and our culture where non-material values and traditions are talked about and kept alive. David Bumbau, who's associate professor of ministry at Meadville Lombard Theological School, and never one to mince words, recently said that the purpose of the church is the salvation of the world. If he is a Unitarian Universalist, that's not exactly what we think of as our language. Bear with me here. The purpose of church's ministry, said Bumbau, lay and clergy, is to enlist people in a vision which lifts them out of dumb fascination with themselves, which lifts them out of their little local universes, which helps them understand themselves as part of an ongoing venture, responsible to generations past and to generations yet to come, for building a world of justice and peace, of mercy and hope. In the current climate, he continues, such assertions sound grandiose and curiously empty, like a faint echo from a time long ago. And yet, I remain convinced that stripped of a commanding vision, the church becomes little more than another part of the entertainment industry, competing with television programs about miracles and angels. James Luther Adams, one of our great theologians, called on religious liberals to be forth-tellers, F-O-R-T-H, tellers, interpreters of the ultimate meaning of life. Now, I'm not saying that we all must speak in a unified voice. I am saying that we religious liberals need church as a starting place to name the injustices of our time and to name what we are going to do about them. As Unitarian Universalists and religious liberals, we need to be able to speak to the religious right loudly and forcefully. We need to be the prophetic voice that calls out an alternative to narrow-mindedness and authoritarianism, the prophetic voice that clamors for human freedom and creativity and potential. The power to do this is found in a community of persons gathered in a church. Adams said that the prophets were trying to correct the evils of mass society by the restoration of primary relations wherein compassion, friendliness, intimacy, and common responsibility could again prevail. They wanted the return of the power of mutuality as over against the power of domination, where people are not treated as things. Where can we learn to do this? In the church. In the church, we are supported by the fellowship, the friendliness, the concern of each for all and of all for each that enables us to go out into the larger community to demand that love and justice prevail. Bruce Marshall wrote a little story about something that happened to him that speaks to this. Every once in a while, I'm reminded why I am a Unitarian Universalist, he writes, and why it is so important that Unitarian Universalists remain strong and vital. One such case came in the form of a letter from the Fuller Theological Seminary. Our church, this is a church of which Marshall was the minister, our church offers a fellowship to students preparing for the Unitarian Universalist ministry. This is a generous award and would be welcomed by any student who is struggling to get through school without going into too much debt. I had sent an announcement of this fellowship to each school listed by the UUA as having students preparing for our ministry. The response I received from the Fuller Theological Seminary said, "Unfortunately, we will not be able to post nor to advertise this award on our campus." Fuller's commitment to an evangelical faith and traditional Trinitarian doctrine does not allow for open acceptance of Unitarian beliefs. It happened in the late 80s, early 90s. Well, my, writes Marshall, To add insult to insult, Trinitarian was capitalized and Unitarian was not. It appears that we don't even warrant a capital letter. Proper usage, he says, would indicate the reverse. But the real issue is that we live in a time when the peoples of the world are more and more divided. I would hope that religious communities could help bridge these differences and bring us together. Too often, though, religion is just one more force that keeps people apart, such as when the good news of Christianity becomes a message of exclusion and intolerance, a division into the saved and the damned. How sad that is. Marshall says this incident does reaffirm the importance of our Unitarian Universalist mission to show that love is not restricted to those who are theologically correct, to demonstrate that what unites us is more important than what keeps us apart, to offer the possibility of building a community in which we can come together in peace and with compassion and justice, even though we have differences. This is a simple message, and it's not exactly new, but it still needs to be proclaimed. It still needs to be heard. Which brings me to hope, the last of the big three on my list of answers to the question, why have church? We have church because of hope. We do not necessarily have to be optimistic to be hopeful. Bruce Marshall says that hope is less specific than optimism. Hope is an attitude that looks for possibility in whatever life deals us. Hope is more resilient, more enduring, more helpful than optimism. In a serious illness, for example, there are often setbacks. In the face of these, optimism may wear down. But hope encourages us to move forward despite the setbacks. Eric Fromm observed, to hope means to be ready at every moment for that which is not yet born, and yet not become desperate if there is no birth in our lifetime. Those whose hope is weak settle for comfort or for violence. Those whose hope is strong see and cherish signs of new life and are ready every moment to help the birth of that which is ready to be born. We hope that our prophetic voice will be heard. We hope that we will continue to speak in that prophetic voice. We hope that the human race will not destroy itself with nuclear weapons or chemical warfare or by environmental degradation or in ways we haven't even considered yet. We hope that our occasional glimpses of awe and wonder and joy in life can be handed down to those who come after us. We hope that we continue to be more than a social club playing at religion. We hope that here in this place we find our divine seed and nurture it and watch it flower. We hope that here in this sacred space we will have the courage to be vulnerable, to laugh, to cry, to listen to each other, to grow from that listening. Why did the UU cross the road? Asked Minister David Blanchard. There may be several possible answers to why the Unitarian Universalists might cross the road. Among them, because that's where they were serving coffee. They didn't cross it, they transcended it. Or they only got as far as the middle of the road since they didn't want to take sides. The fact is that we crossed the road for the same reason the chicken did, to get to the other side. Getting to the other side isn't always simple. People we love die. We grow and change in unexpected ways. We make mistakes and hurt people we care about, and vice versa. We can find ourselves more alone at times than we think we can bear. And yet, there are times when we are overwhelmed by the beauty of the world or by the blessing of unexpected kindness. Getting to the other side is made easier when we choose to travel with others. Life in community isn't always easy, but it's the only way and the only place we can practice being human. Finding our way to the other side is less treacherous when we listen and learn from those who have made the trip before and who know something about the route. Jesus, Buddha, Zoroaster, Rumi, Starhawk. Thoreau, Harriet Tubman, Malcolm X, Harvey Milk, endless list. Teachers whose living was and remains a testament to the sacred dimensions of being human. We will reach the other side with fewer regrets and with less baggage if we have found a way to accept each other for who we are, even as we seek to be who we might become. In community, we are reminded of our ideals, yet it is also a place to confess our limitations and express our deepest hope. Liberal religion is not easy street, but what we have to offer is this: a tradition that affirms human dignity, that encourages spiritual growth and discovery, and that is intellectually honest in the face of the complexities of our time. We offer these tools and our companionship so that we might help each other get safely from here to the other side. I hope you will continue to come here with hope in your heart, with open minds and caring spirits. I hope that you will find in this gathering that you do on Sunday mornings your divinity, both as an individual and as a part of a prophetic community. And because of that, your direction as a liberal church and as the institution that calls itself Prairie UU Society.
And so now we have closing words.
The central task of the religious community is to unveil the bonds that bind each to all. There is a connectedness, a relationship discovered amid the particulars of our own lives and the lives of others. Once felt, it inspires us to act for justice. It is the church that assures us that we are not struggling for justice on our own, but as members of a larger community. The religious community is essential, for alone our vision is too narrow to see all that must be seen, and our strength too limited to do all that must be done. Together, our vision widens and our strength is renewed.